welcome to a Bunta Vista bonus episode. And here we are yet again, living our peaceful lives under the sea. Laying extremely flat and calmly suckling at the seafloor, enjoying all kinds of debris and detritus without a care in the world. It's my friend Theo. Theo, hey. Do you miss your life sitting at the computer, constantly degrading your aging body in service of a wage?
Not at all. There's a real lack of detritus at the computer, real lack of...
You don't get any detritus at work.
You don't get any detritus. You don't get any, like, rotting bodies that have fallen several thousand meters through the sea onto the ground.
Yeah, they're offering none of that at my office.
No, you just got, like, fucking TypeScript and you got Web 2.0. And they don't have the web underneath. That's nice.
There's no web.
There's no web. Except no. Perhaps the ones between my glorious little flippers.
Yeah. Wearing some little flippers when you're flattening your body down there, are you?
Yeah. Yeah. They help me launch off the ground, catch little krill, little bits of fucking coral spawn. Getting some fish jizz.
Yeah.
And I'm scooping that all up in my huge hoover of a mouth. And
you're getting it all.
I'm getting
you're
it
not,
all.
You're not missing a bit of that.
Yeah, I'm not separating them. It's all good.
And over here, swaying gently in the ocean breeze, connected to a complex skeletal system of other coral polyps, it's my friend the coral polyp. It's scientist Jesse. Jesse. Hi. What have you been up to today?
I'm just mainly filtering the water around me for small organisms that I can digest. I heard there was fish jizz.
Yeah, it's good today.
So you're like hearing rumors. You're hearing what's going on around you. Like you're kind of a gossip collector.
Listen, you got to be connected to survive down here. You got to know what's happening where and where the good stuff is at. So
that's true. And you can just sit there quietly, just listening.
Yep.
And that must be
and
nice.
And vibing.
Yeah, I'm doing a lot of vibing here. Mostly swaying gently.
Mostly vibes. And that's why we're all so happy living here under the sea. Jesse, I believe you have a quiz of some kind.
Yeah, I actually also, on my way here, I was thinking about the fish juice. And I also wanted to kind of see where you guys are at in terms of your knowledge of the sea around us. And of later on, I'm going to teach you about the nervous system and consciousness of our friends, the cephalopods. And none of you, as I understand, are cephalopods. Lucy, you haven't actually said, what are you?
Oh, I'm a big, hideous grouper.
Okay, you're a grouper.
Awful. Awful.
Okay, but first, before I get into talking about the intelligence of our octopi friends and our... Oh, I already fucked it up. So apparently, I looked this up. It's not octopi. You're not supposed to say that.
Oh,
that was a lie.
Really?
Yeah.
Some bullshit.
I'm not going to say octopodes.
You're not going to say octopodes or octopodes?
No.
Octopodes. I think you say octopuses is actually also correct.
Octopuses, okay.
So, just so we're clear.
Octopussies.
I feel like this is an octopussies kind of podcast, if we're given the choice.
Why did they tell us all to say octopi?
I don't know. I was Googling this, and it's like someone misunderstood how Latin words have a declension when there's a U.S. or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
Someone said, and it sounded fancy, and no one else wanted to kind of seem wrong.
That's the understanding I got from when you Google something and it says, were you looking for this? So you don't have to click on anything. And it just kind of brings up a sentence with maybe a bolded part of the sentence. And that's what basically the gist of it was. So
wow.
You could look more into this if you wanted to, but
learn something new every day down here.
But I thought before that we should get warmed up here, get our various nervous systems warmed up. I don't really have much of a neural system as I think I'm just kind of a floating jelly-like organism within. I'm in a coral structure, it seems.
Have you got nerves? Are you got any nerves down there?
I do believe... Well, do corals have nerves?
Some sort of like CNS going on?
Yeah, do you feel pain, bro?
Oh, jeez. We're going to get into all
pain,
that.
Pain?
Do any of us feel pain? That's a good question. And we're going to get into that. But first, okay, here's a little thing I thought up that might be fun. I'm going to give you guys a quick quiz, and I want you to try and answer this like kind of quick. It's going to be kind of rapid fire here.
Okay.
I'm going to read you a series of organisms and their scientific names, so like their genus and species, like you know, like Homo sapiens.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to tell me if it is a real species or is it something I have just made up?
Oh, okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Hmm.
Number one, here's a fish named Boops Boops.
I know that one's true.
Yeah, I knew Lucy.
I'm aware of the work of Boops Boops.
You are the Boops. I encourage everyone listening also to Google all of these, every single one of them, because Boops Boops is a sweet little fish.
Well, that's a real one. He's just a little guy.
He's just a sweet little guy. His name is Boops Boops. So here's number two. This is a spider. So we've probably never experienced or heard of a spider, but it's like a down here in the ocean, but it's kind of like a crab, but I guess more fucked up. Anyways, this one is Calponio Harrison Fordi.
Oh, that absolutely sounds like some shit that a scientist would do. Like one of you people.
Is that a crab that loves crashing his plane?
That one's real. Yeah, you can Google that. It just looks like a fucked up tarantula, to be honest. Here's another one. A wasp named Aha Ha.
Didn't you make that one up?
That's not real.
That's real, actually.
No. Come on.
Do you want to know? Aha. Does anyone want to have a guess as to why that's named that?
Because that's the sound you make when he bites you?
Lucy's close. It's... So apparently, if you just, again, if you Google this, this scientist was receiving some kind of package from another scientist, and it was some information, I think, that was confirming that it was a distinct species. So basically, the moment this man or woman, I forget, was discovering this new species of wasp, and they went, aha! And then the one person next to them allegedly said something to the effect of like, haha, you can't be serious. Oh, yes. And then they named the species that.
Scientists just be out there discovering a new fish and they're like, nah, I'm going to call it Morbius. This is a Jared Leto fish.
How did you know what I... Okay, we haven't submitted that paper yet, but I guess you're going to spoil Morbius for... God.
I'd like to see Morbius.
We got to talk about Morbius at some point.
I kind of want to see Morbius and my boyfriend won't see it with me.
What?
Like, I just think it looks good.
I mean, the theaters are packed, though, so...
Yeah, that's true.
There might be upwards of, getting like, COVID so four or five people in there.
A subspecies of what we call the green bean. This is Beanus gigantorecticus.
Yeah.
Theo, you're saying that one's
weird? Yeah, I've grown a few of those in my time.
Asking my girlfriend if she'd like to see my Beanus erectus.
Lucy? You want to on that one?
I'm going to say you made that one up.
I made that one up. Yeah, I definitely made that
God
up.
God damn it.
Yeah, sorry. Here's a sea sponge called Spongiforma squarepantsii. So like the
that
show
one's,
you might
that
be
That one's got to be real. That's got that's the kind of...
Yeah.
Got the kind of cloying...
Sure.
A really upsetting humor of a scientist, yeah.
You guys are pretty good at this. Okay, that one is real, yes. It's a sea sponge. Here is a spider called... Oh, this is going to be tough. Acrogonoleptes Che Guevara.
Che Guevara. Why? Is that real?
That's real.
Spiders on a lot of t-shirts.
Yeah. There's basically, I found a Wikipedia article that's just species named after famous people, and it is fascinating. I don't know. I didn't check why they named it that, but.
Probably just a guy that loved wearing a Che Guevara t-shirt.
He's like, you know what I'm wearing right now?
Mm.
Look down. See that guy?
Look down. He was like, there you go.
Okay, next one is a group of three species of spider from the same genus. Okay. Mm-hmm. Here's one. Agathidium bushii, Agathidium chaney, and Agathidium rumsfeldi.
No, you made that up.
Thea?
Yeah, I gotta stick with Lucy on this one.
That one is real.
why?
I don't know. There's a Clinton one too. I'm not sure if that was the same group, but
where's the Agathinium Jeb? You know.
Well, he might be the bush.
Agathinium
Epstein. It doesn't specify which bush.
I think those are species of slime molds, so that might have been like an oven they were doing, like
A little oven. You know what I mean? Okay, that's nice.
I'm kind of hoping that's the case. I don't know. Here's a sweet looking little beetle. Just picture a nice little beetle. Named Beardius Dioi, named after specifically Ronnie James Dio, or Dio, from Holy Diver, the song that I like.
I'd like that to be real.
Theo?
Real.
That's real. Nice.
Wow.
Here's a bunch of beetles in the same genus. We have jelly bean, jelly roll, jelly fish, jelly belly, and jelly donut.
They sound nice.
They're actually really, they're cute. It's a cute beetle.
I'm going to
really
say you made it up, but that sounds nice.
Theo? Yep.
That one is real. Those are all real. Those are real beetles. A spider named Peter Parkeri.
Oh, fuck off.
Yeah, no, that's real.
Lucy, yeah, what's real.
Can you tell us more about the spider?
Yeah, it is black and white, and it has a bunch of red on the back of it, and it's got a bunch of dots too.
Yeah. No, that's real.
I made that up. I'm sorry. Okay. I looked up spider that looks like Spider-Man, and
you do
had
have
a picture
the scientist
here.
Brain.
See, yeah, so no, I thought I'd got you asking for some details there, but you came prepared.
Yep.
See, I reckon we should have called the redback spider the Spider-Man spider, so Australian kids all over could go, look, mummy, I've...
Are those deadly? Are those
Spider-Man's
spider
on
my
hand.
Is that the same as a Black Widow? Is it a different one?
No,
is a Black Widow like a white tail? What's a Black Widow?
They have a little red hourglass on their
The redback
toys.
One can like literally kill you.
Yeah, but redbacks are horrifying looking. They're not big, right? But they've got a big caboose on them.
They have a big booty.
When they bite you, my understanding is that it hurts like nothing on earth, and often... God. Not a lot of people die from redbacks, but...
It does look like a Black Widow, but it is not like the same shape here.
It's really small.
Yeah, but they're everywhere in Australia. And apparently if you're going to die, you're going to die from the pain or the anxiety of being bitten, because it sucks so bad to be bitten by a redback.
I've never seen one.
I think I'd be fine, actually.
You're built different?
I don't know, but I've never actually been bit by a spider.
I think they're a much bigger feature in our lives in Australia when we had like toilets on the outside.
Yeah.
Because that's where they love. They're horrible little toilet creatures.
Oh. I love being under the toilet seat is my understanding.
Yeah, looking up at your taint, etc. Whatever you've got down there, they're checking it out.
They're ready.
If you get bit there, you're it's over, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably...
No, no, they'll just bite you on the hand or foot or something, but they are looking directly at your asshole beforehand.
It's understandable why they'd want to bite me in that case.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to see that. Next one, Carambus Jack Nicholson. Carambus is like a weird little dust mite looking thing, microscopic looking spider thing. Carambus Jack Nicholson.
That sucks.
Why do people do this? Just do a Latin word.
I think Harrison Ford might have been named that because he donated a bunch. It was like an Australian fund he donated to. A lot of these, I got to say, when I was looking these up, a lot of these were named after us famous Australians or by famous Australians. So your guys' fault here.
Is that one real?
You think it's real?
Yeah.
Theo?
I'm reversing my guess now. I think it's fake.
It's real. Sorry.
Oh, God damn it.
Yeah. Here
it's
is...
so hard to read.
Here is a bacteria related to E. coli that gives you bloody diarrhea. It's called Flagellus DC Comics Extended Universe. Is that the realest one yet?
That's good. That's the realest one. I was just thinking, there's surely a bunch of like Donald Trump related things that people have named.
Yeah.
Like an E. coli bacteria or something orange.
It's a new species of mango out here. Yeah. And guess what?
Yeah.
We're going to name him.
That'd be a good one. The new mango Mussolini.
This is the brown algae, and it's fucking... It's Cavifi.
Jeez. This is giving me a lot of ideas if I ever do discover a novel
like
species.
Like the tweet.
That one is fake. I'm sorry. I made that one up. So here's one last one.
Is there a DC Extended Universe? I don't even... I thought it was just a Marvel... Now I've got... Like several extended universes to deal with.
You're gonna get the worst emails in from this. I'm not
saying
anything.
I don't
care.
I think we've flushed out most of these.
Yeah, I was gonna say I don't know about our crossover and Marvel. There's gonna be some.
Oh, Morbius is Marvel. That's right.
Is Morbius Marvel? Okay.
Yeah, Batman is DC, and then Green Lantern is DC. God. Okay, one last one. Okay, this is two species of legume, same genus. Daviesa DeVito, referring to the actor playing the diminutive twin in the Universal Studio Films Twins 1998, yeah. across Arnold Schwarzenegger, who is also has a legume named after him. Is that real or did I make that up?
That's pretty complex if you made that up. You were thinking of the Indeed. Movie Twins?
The Universal Studio Film Twins 1988, yeah. yes.
Yeah, you made it up.
Okay. That's real. That is real. I'm not kidding. That is a real thing. That is a real thing that someone did.
We're so bad at this.
And guess what, folks? It's a species of bitter pea from, you heard it here at first, Australia. So.
Wow.
What's going on over there?
Wow.
All right, you guys, I didn't even keep score, but I think you got them all right. So.
Yep.
Well done. So let's talk about octopodes.
I would like to
octopodes. I'm going to stick with that because I think it sounds cool. Octopodes.
Yeah, I'm going with octopuses.
I like octopodes.
Octopus is also fine. Octopi is not, as we discussed. But I thought I would get your general knowledge. What do you guys know of octopodes? Do you like them? Do you not like them? Do you know much about them? Have you ever interacted with one?
I'm a big fan, and I fear them.
Yeah.
I believe they should be respected.
I hate them, and I fear them.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, no, like, they are absolutely on some forbidden knowledge shit, right? Like, there's no...
You nailed it, Theo.
It's no coincidence that Lovecraft, like, his most unknowable creatures were all fucking tentacles and...
Yeah.
Big knowledge sacks and all that sort of stuff. I assume I haven't read anything.
No,
I don't read anything.
Your
but,
instinct is right here. So we'll
yeah,
some...
you know, like I started watching Arrival again while I was doing some work yesterday. Mm. And of course they're like, you know, because they're supposed to be like unknowable, right? We can't, or it's impossible to even communicate with them from the outset. And of course they all look like fucked up octopuses, except they walk on hands.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's no mistake either.
Yeah.
And they're in a tank that they're probably trying to escape at this moment. I know that they're like chronic escape artists.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah.
They use their tiny little brain to... like focus into whatever it is to give them freedom at any point in time.
They're very smart. And I also believe that they are malevolent. Like,
you think they,
they are a malevolent creature.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see how that shakes out as we continue, actually.
Yeah. Okay. Like if they were in a little aquatic jail cell, right? And I was sort of just sitting on the outside, leaning backwards in my chair against the bars, kind of going, they would not kind of reach out to grab the keys off my belt. They would make a makeshift hammer out of a halved coconut, smash my brain in, and then take the keys off of my belt.
Theo, you know a lot about octopodes.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about them, huh?
And there's a Twilight Zone aspect.
Dreading learning more.
Jordan Peele's new Twilight Zone does indeed have an octopus strangle someone.
Oh.
I think it's not through a bars, but it's like someone gets strangled by an octopus. Mm. I like that episode. It's really good. But okay, so you guys seem pretty familiar with octopodes. That's nice. Mm. And also other, we're saying other cephalopods legs. Here. They have 8 arms. You cannot call them tentacles or else...
Okay.
Booting you from the call.
you can't do
you
that.
Don't have that power.
You're unable to do that.
I think I believe, and someone's gonna write in. But I'm a fish guy, so this was newish to me as well.
But this is a fish, right?
No. These are mollusks.
You're saying that there is such a thing as a fish, Jesse?
Yes. Yes.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Oh my God! He admitted.
But that's great. You guys seem pretty familiar with. So I read this book, Other Minds, by Peter Godfrey Smith. Is about octopus consciousness. And then later I'm going to get into a little bit about some fishes, which are not mollusks. So I'll also be referencing Wikipedia and What a Fish Knows by Jonathan Balcombe. Great book.
That's a hilarious. Both you sent me books. A picture of that book, and I
so
find
good.
That so funny. It's just called What a Fish Knows.
Can I tell you, this book is, it's like, I like both of them, but the What a Fish Knows is delightful. It's really good. It's got some great, both have some great picks too. But let's just, okay, so I'm going to do a little recap of just like, what is an octopus? So octopus, soft-bodied, eight-limbed mollusk, and they're in the order octopode. They're in the cephalopod class, which also includes squids and cuttlefish, and if you've ever seen a nautilus, so they're in the same genre as, I mean like movie genre, not literally the same, because that's also a word. And they have a little beak for a mouth.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Yeah, it's pretty haunting, honestly. And they can, kind of a fundamental thing about octopi is that they have this jet that they shoot water out of, and it helps them locomote by like basically jet propulsion. They also breathe through it. The thing a lot of people know about octopodes is that they are very smart. But what a lot of people don't know is that they have a really complex nervous system, but it's not complex in the way that yours or mine is. It is kind of distributed throughout their entire body.
So it's complex in a way that's like alien to us, you would say.
Very much so. In fact, for the listeners at home, you can't see this, but if you look at the slideshow I provided y'all, you can see this is a tree of evolution on the left. And 600 million years ago, or maybe 750, somewhere in that ballpark, our last common ancestor with octopodes diverged. This was a flatworm. So your great-great-great-great-great-grandfather mother was a flatworm, and somehow, you know, those flatworms split off evolutionarily 600 million years ago, evolved into things like insects, worms, and mollusks, while the other lineage evolved all the way to vertebrates and also weirdly starfish. They're like weirdly more related to us. It's just strange.
I don't like that.
In that vertebrate group is fish, so we have a huge group of cousins that are way more closely related to us than the mollusks are. Like, I'm more closely related to like the bird outside my window by a huge extent than I am to octopi, which is why a lot of researchers think that consciousness in these creatures evolved kind of independently than it did in other organisms. So they your instinct that they are kind of alien is actually pretty apt, because it's probably the closest thing we'll get to like a consciousness that is not from the same.
Like, it's pretty weird, right? Because we see fish as generally like they're not big on consciousness. Like, there's not a lot going on.
No, they're just
sort
of like booping around down there.
Yeah.
Yes.
For the most tides, part, those kinds of animals just seem to like there's just vibes.
Yeah.
There's not much else.
This was
parallel
like
evolution is one of like things that fucks me up, because I know our brains are not supposed to be able to handle like iterations when they get into the trillions sort of thing, right? Like that eventually there's going to be stuff, there's going to be concepts like carcinization that are just beneficial to us, right? And it's going to come up again and again and again, but in like different weird ways. And I think octopuses, like way off on that branch, getting their own fucking ideas about how the world should work, are very disturbing to me.
I gotta say, I started reading this book and I found it, initially I was like really freaked out, like to level it, I almost had like an existential crisis. I was like, holy shit, this is kind of terrifying. But I'd actually kind of looped back around to it being actually quite nice, because it these things make the case that consciousness is not a binary on-off switch, essentially. It is like kind of a gradient that with increasing complexity, it kind of just focuses into existence. So it makes consciousness more of like a smooth fabric of the universe, if you want to get all hippy dippy with it. That is actually
as a process.
Yes. It's not like
you might like have the process of digestion or the process of these other things that kind of just gets more complex but more specialized as you get like billions of generations past, sort of thing.
Yes. And here's an interesting side note, is that a lot of us assume like as evolution progresses, it's inevitably going to get always more complicated, and that is not always the case, actually. Like, you can, it's not really called devolving, but evolution doesn't select
there's not an arrow forwards. Yeah,
right. So it's kind of just creating whatever is useful and appropriate. And some of these researchers think that octopodes needed to get this smart because they were using a lot of tools. Or they were approaching a lot of new scenarios, like having to open a clam, for example. You need like some kind of
I struggled with that.
If you can't just crush it outright, you need like kind of a a way to deal with it. And so they also have a lot of social systems that we'll get into, but okay. So that's one aspect of octopus intelligence, is like it's kind of this weird distributed thing that we don't quite understand. But it gets even more weird, actually, I find. Let me find this cool passage here. Okay, so 2/3 of an octopus's neurons are in the nerve cords of its arms, and these arms are capable of complex reflex actions without input from the brain. Unlike vertebrates, the complex motor skills of octopuses are not organized in their brains, but they're not organized in their brains via internal somatotopic maps of their bodies. Does that make sense to you?
No.
Yeah, so they don't
remotely.
Their brain doesn't have a concept of, okay, this is the current shape and position of my arm, and this is where I want it to be next. Their arms just fucking sort that out for them.
Yes, yes. I have this incredible anecdote from this book here that, like, the analogy is, like, super useful. So, okay, so let's consider some analogies, beginning with acts like blinking and breathing. These are activities that normally happen involuntarily, but through attention, you can assert control over them. An octopus's arm movements have something like this combination. The analogy is imperfect, as breathing, while normally involuntary, can be subjected to very fine-grained control when you do intervene and breathe voluntarily. The attention is used to take over what is normally an automatic process. In the octopus, if the mixed control interpretation is right, this is kind of the thesis he's going with in this chapter, the central guidance of the movements is never complete, and the peripheral system always has its say. To put it too anthropomorphically, you would send an arm out deliberately and hope the local fine-tuning goes right.
Sure.
Yeah.
So
sure,
if you have to grab a coffee mug, you kind of, I guess you're kind of sending out an arm being like, arm, take this to my mouth, but you are not.
You're not controlling
right.
what it's doing down there.
Which, if Lucy, you watched me play Octodad, right?
Yeah.
It's a very similar idea, honestly. You're like, I hope this fucking arm does something useful.
Can you just, like, do what I'm asking you, please?
Which is wild to think about. It's like these, and the arms can also taste and feel texture independently of what the octopus is like.
I've heard that. Tasting. That's fucked up.
It's really strange. And it's not, it goes like several layers deeper, too. So you've probably seen octopodes change their skin color. We all seen this. So if you
we've got the blue ringed octopus, like in Australia, that we're very familiar with. The cute little guy. He's just a little fella. Just
like,
let him
kill
if you see
instantly.
One. Just let him like crawl up your arm. They're very friendly.
Give him a little
all
pat.
Over sort of
oh,
thing.
Dear Lord.
Then immediately dial 000.
Yes. Malevolent creature.
Yeah.
Is 000 like the?
It's like 911.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Like 111 for our UK listeners.
Is that what it is?
I think so. Or 112 or something if you want to call the non-pedo police.
You got to call a special number
for that. Special number.
Oh. Dang, you guys have those? Cool. Okay, I'm finding this other... Okay, so here's a unique thing here. If you'll all go to the third slide I've sent you here. Sorry, listen. Okay. For listeners, just Google octopus skin pigment sac. I repeat, Google octopus skin pigment sac. If you
is
see
that
the top,
how they do it? They've got a little sac in there.
They've got a bunch of little sacs, Lucy. So if you look at their skin on the top left there, like that's just their skin at close up, and each of those little sacs is a little thing of pigment. And what their body is doing is constricting or opening those pigment sacs like wider and narrower to change like pixels
that's
on a screen.
That's fucking crazy.
But that's only like one color. Like usually they can change it all red or all white because that's the pigment sacs. They also have an additional layer that can reflect light. They're called iridophores, I believe.
Oh.
And so that's how they do more complex, like shiny stuff and turn different colors to match their surroundings.
Holographic stuff.
So let me blow your minds even further, though. So the control of the skin color and even texture might not necessarily be controlled by the conscious part of the what we would call like the conscious part of the octopus. That's
yeah,
just
the,
kind of
the meat
happening.
That's at the top.
Right. And it's kind of just doing that, and it's kind of blurs what kind of the equivalent in like if you're going to get spiritual about is like the difference between focused attention and then like the meditative, like you're only doing the background stuff essentially, but there's no focused consciousness pointing at a, somebody made the analogy of like a global workspace at a computer. I don't know, computers, I don't know what that is.
What's in a workspace? What's a computer?
Like, it's basically like the octopus's brain is doing the focused, attention-based handling of what's in front of them. And mm-hmm. the rest, the arms are not doing that. But they're also, the arms themselves are doing quite complex things on their own as well. It's very strange. And it also plays into, like, they can change color in their skin, but they're, for some reason their eyes only have one photoreceptor protein. So it's like, why can they change color if they can't necessarily see color? But they also think they can use chromatic aberration to turn monochromatic vision into color. So if you see in the top right picture here, just look up, listener, look up chromatic aberration. I don't know how this works, but it's like when you have those cool designs that look like a 3D word coming at you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So chromatic aberration is because you typically get it on a photo lens and typically on the outside where the imperfections of the lens are more more severe and there's greater bending of the lens. And what it is that when lights of different color enter a lens at a not straight angle, so at a slight angle, they will bend at different angles. So they will separate, like the Pink Floyd sort of prism, right? So, because they have different wavelengths. So I think what they're doing here is separating, even though they've got monochromatic sensors, they may be able to get different senses the different colors by changing the amount of refraction and therefore like chromatic aberration in their lens, sort of like we might, an analogy might be that we can't really sense depth except as a result of the difference between our two eyes, and to get a better sense of our depth, you know, we can move our heads backwards and forwards slightly and see how they change. And I wonder whether they're changing the lens slightly,
sure,
by changing it, you know, and then seeing how those how the image changes, and therefore getting a sense of the colors.
It's interesting you say that because a lot of these articles reference how the eye, if you see the eye of an octopus, is sometimes it's just like a horizontal bar, and sometimes they can like move their flaps to make it more of like a weird U shape looking or W shape. They reference like this is somehow like a camera, similar to a camera aperture, which I suppose all eyes are in some sense, but pretty neat.
I don't like that they can do all that. I don't care for it.
I mean, I think that's fair. It's jealousy rears its ugly head in all of us.
I'm definitely feeling jealous, and jealousy is a disease, bitch.
Lucy, let me dispel that jealousy with a few sentences. Do you know how octopus? Oh my god, I'm so sorry.
You're going to sound so stupid.
Could we start over? Maybe could we just delete? So do you guys know how octopodes have intercourse?
I guess not.
Very carefully.
You'd hope so, but okay, here we go.
It's not like an egg-laying thing like fish do.
Hang on, let me just see. You got a couple of organ things here.
Oh, yeah, see, it's diagram.
I'm guessing that the funnel's got something to do with it. What'd that funnel do?
What's that funnel? It's like a little red rocket.
You know what's weird is I usually see that written as a siphon. I'm not sure if this is like an old diagram. That's the thing they're breathing through and also expelling water through to propel themselves.
That's typically funnel. Just for sock drills.
That's
then.
For sucking, not sucking.
You got it. You guys are great at this. Okay, but here we go. Are you ready for this? The male may cling to the top of or side of the female or position himself beside her.
Yep.
There's just some like setback. I'm not going to be able to get through some of these sentences because we're going to. Okay. Here we go. There is some speculation that he may first use his hectocoitus to remove any spermatophore or sperm already present in the female. So he's, to be crude, scooping it out.
Yeah,
I feel like first. I've heard this, or some other animals do this. Like they push out the other one.
Yeah, they're like, look, there's only going to be one. one set of cum in there.
He picks up a spermatophore from his spermatophoric sac with his hectocoitalis and inserts it. Hectocoitalis is one of his arms. I think it's a specialized arm that can...
The dick again, arm.
Yeah, it's a... I mean, it's...
Oh, yeah, I see. Yeah, it's got a little... It's got a ligula on the end of it. The,
I'm not sure what
little,
the ligula is, and I'm not sure...
Yeah, just sort of like... It's a bit more fleshy than the other arms. a bit more sensitive, I think, to her needs.
Well, he's inserting it into the female's mantle cavity and depositing it in the correct location for the species, which in the giant Pacific octopus is in the opening of the oviduct. That's the thing that has come out of it.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds like a vagina. You don't have to call it a mantle cavity.
I hadn't read this sentence before, but here we go. Two spermatophores are transferred in this way, semicolon. These are about 1 meter long. And the empty ends may protrude from the female's mantle. A complex hydraulic mechanism releases the sperm from the spermatophore, and it is stored internally by the female. So she's... Okay. This is really gross. I'm sorry, but what I'm imagining is kind of emptying a condom full of sperms into oneself.
All right,
because
he's got it with his arm.
Yeah.
He's just placing it in there.
But also... Our like interpretation of the physiology of an octopus kind of makes it look like their head.
Yep.
So he's kind of just putting like a potentially meters long dick into her head and sort of then just pumping it in there like a
it's not
like
even
a concrete
the,
truck.
I think the spermatophores are actually just like detaching.
Oh,
like, those
okay.
are the containers of sperm. That's hence my like.
Yeah.
God, I'm so grossed out of myself. But like the used condom analogy, it's like
it's not our fault. It's package. The octopus's fault.
Yeah, they did this.
They came up with this.
They came
it
up with this.
Doesn't sound that crazy. Like that's a bit more straightforward than some other animals having sex.
It's not that wild, right? But Lucy, do you see the like the next slide here? Is it just a mother octopus guarding all of the eggs, which they have to keep oxygenated to have them survive? Well, it looks like tens of thousands of eggs. Here's the part I thought you might not be jealous of, is once octopodes. I'm so sorry.
Lost
once octopodes, when they do have sex, they quickly start to die.
Oh.
So I don't think all species do this. But the male will senesce, what's called, where basically your cells stop doing maintenance, and they just kind of die, and most of them get eaten. Because they can't kind of get away anymore.
Oh.
And the mother is guarding the egg, brooding the eggs, washing them with fresh water. Keeping salt water flowing over them to exchange oxygen. And then once those start hatching, she also ages and dies. And they only live about 2 years-ish, depending on the species. It's like, they're not particularly long-lived, which is interesting.
Yeah.
I would simply be Reddit child-free if I were an octopus.
I think they disabled I was reading that one species, they like disabled its need or ability to fuck, and it like didn't age. I mean, it will eventually die, I think, but it didn't do the, it's basically programmed aging that's built into the thing. And when you don't let it do that, it won't die for like, I don't know how long they kept it, but it was longer than 2 years.
They're like replicants, but replicants couldn't stop themselves from fucking.
That's right. And they only die if they...
Do replicants have sex?
In the movies, they do.
What's her name does?
Yeah.
Daryl Hannah?
No.
The new one?
From the old one, the assistant robot of the, of Tyrell. Tyrell's lady robot.
Mm-hmm.
It's heavily implied in the second one that Harrison Ford has sex with her.
Right.
And
then Ryan Gosling has sex too in the new one.
Does
with,
he?
With his
with an AI.
Well, with a sex worker who
is with also, a sex worker
being
with
hologrammed by Ana de Armas.
God. I love Denis Villeneuve.
That was good. Mm. I really liked that movie.
Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was great. Like how do you go all of those years and then like, well, time to make a good Blade Runner sequel.
And then did it. He
and then he
pulled
did
it off
it.
The absolute madman.
And they had Batista with his tiny little glasses in the beginning.
Batista was so the guy that made me think, oh, okay, they're going to nail this movie. Like, how the fuck is that opening scene so good?
With his little grub.
With his little
grub
glasses.
Farm.
He can barely grab them.
He's like cooking some kind of porridge or something, I think. I forget. Yeah. Yeah, that rules so hard. And the tea thing is like, the porridge thing is like whistling while there's... Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
That's just great movie. You guys just want to watch Blade Runner?
Yeah. Watch Blade Runner if you've never heard of it. Good movie.
All right, next slide. Okay, so we have an octopus opening a container with a screw cap. This is something that... These are like terrible pictures, but basically octopi can't... Jeez. Octopodes can... open complex containers, which
there's a lot of videos of them like doing stuff. You would hope that they can't do. They can like open doors and containers and things like that.
My son can't do that.
Let me one up you here. A lot of people know about the unscrewing stuff, but get a load of this. At an aquarium in Coburg, Germany, an octopus named Otto. Just making sure you're still with me on that. Was known to juggle his fellow tank mates around as well as throw.
What an asshole.
That's so disrespectful.
As well as throw rocks to smash the aquarium glass.
Yep.
On more than one
occasion.
On more than one occasion, Otto even caused short circuiting by crawling out of his tank and shooting a jet of water at the overhead lamp.
Yeah, I know of Otto. I've heard
That's
of
so
Otto.
Good.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
so good. That's so good.
Yeah,
he could probably operate a snub-nosed 32 revolver as well. So we should. It's loading a little.
He could. Like, I believe, hearing this, that like an octopus could shoot me with a pistol.
I mean, they could probably load all six barrels at once. They got two fingers left over for fucking.
Oh my god. Additionally, I didn't look into this sentence any further, but cephalopods have been shown to have the capacity for future planning and reward processing after being tested with the, and here's a hyperlink if you wanted to click it, the Stanford Marshmallow Experiment.
Oh, yeah.
What's that?
I'm not familiar with that.
So this is where they got a bunch of kids, toddlers, and I'll get the details wrong, but the crux of it is they put a marshmallow in front of the kids, and these are 4 or 5 year old kids. And they said, you can have this marshmallow now.
Oh, like the delayed gratification. Oh,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or in 15 minutes,
you can have
two
marshmallows.
Interesting. And these kids are just like, their psyches are just like cleaving their bodies in two. Their souls are ascending to heaven, like just squirming in the seat going, I could get that marshmallow. I gotta eat that fucking marshmallow.
Dang, so the octopodes can do that then. Successfully. They can wait. That's wild. Here's another excerpt from this book, Other Minds, that I think you'll both find pretty dope. We have in 1959, we have a scientist named Dews applying some standard experiments on learning and reinforcements. And here's some summaries of this person's notes. Quote. Whereas Albert and Bertram, two octopodes, gently operated at the lever, this lever allowed them to like pump food into their aquarium. They could pull a lever and then a light will come on and a little piece of sardine will come out. And we have two octopuses named Albert and Bertram that are doing this reasonably consistently. But there is a third octopus named Charles, and he is different.
Okay.
So we got Charles, Albert and Bertram gently operated the lever while free-floating. Charles anchored several tentacles on the side of the tank and others around the lever and applied great force. The lever was bent a number of times and the 11th day was broken, leading to a premature termination of the experiment. He continues, Light suspended a little above the level of the water was not subject of much attention by Albert or Bertram, but Charles repeatedly encircled the lamp with tentacles and, again, applied considerable force, tending to carry the light into the tank. This behavior is incompatible with lever-pulling behavior. It's a little cheekiness from the author there. Charles had a high tendency to direct jets of water out of the tank. Specifically, they were in the direction of the experimenter. The animal spent much time with the eyes above the surface of the water, directing a jet at any individual who approached the tank. This behavior interfered material with the smooth conduct of the experiments, and again, is clearly incompatible with lever-pulling. Scientist. I was also reading somewhere in this book where, like, I don't know if it was Charles, but it would hold grudges against certain technicians. So it would be like, anytime Randy comes up to the tank, he gets a huge jet of water in the face. But like, if there's no, you know, the other one is not person working there is not persecuted in this way. Here's probably my favorite anecdote about octopod intelligence here. So this is a person is one of these research technicians is just has the job of like feeding these like octopodes either squid or their preferred food, which is I think is like mackerel or something. Okay, so quote, one day Bull is the person was walking down a row of tanks feeding each octopus a piece of thawed squid as she passed. Upon reaching the end of the row, she walked back the way she'd come. The octopus in the first tank, though, seemed to be waiting for her. It had not eaten its squid, but instead was holding it conspicuously. As Bull stood there, the octopus made its way slowly across the tank toward the outflow pipe, watching her all the way. When it went in, the octopus reached the outflow pipe, still watching her, it dumped the scrap of squid down the drain. What I'm imagining here is she's giving out a second-rate food, and this octopus is like, yeah, you want me to eat this?
Check
this
out. What do you call this?
That's wild. It's like making sure she's watching you, like, throw it in the bin.
I love octopus spite.
They're
like bitter.
Like, vengeful.
Well, first of all, we put them in a tank.
Oh, and I have... Oh, I forgot to tell you guys this. I have bad news about... So, it's been pretty made clear that a lot of animals do feel pain, including fish, actually. If you give a fish a drug that just inflicts like a mild burning sensation, something they don't like, and if you put half the tank, you put a little dilute painkiller in it, the fish will all aggregate towards the painkiller side to alleviate their symptoms, presumably.
Oh,
so
really?
It's not, I don't know, like back in the day, naturalists used to think like,
yeah,
animals are just like dumb machines, really. And it's, again, with consciousness being more of a gradient than an on-off, it's not really bare. I mean, it's obvious. If you kick a dog, which I would never do, you can tell that they're displeased. Yeah. Right?
Someone had to kick the dog, though, for us to work that out.
That's true.
I mean, you're not wrong, because before 1992, we have a lot of protections, at least in the U.S. and abroad usually, for you can't just experiment on animals, on vertebrates, willy-nilly. You can't just, like, vivisect animals because it's illegal. But for a long time, only vertebrates were covered under that, so like dogs, cats, humans, whatever. And octopodes are invertebrates, so are fish. So they didn't have that kind of protection. Also, not fish, so are cuttlefish. Fish are vertebrates. But so essentially, you could legally and... people didn't know they were feeling pain. You could just do whatever the fuck you wanted to a captive octopode. Like, you could cut its arm off and see what happens. You could split it open while it's alive and put chemicals all over it. But that has since changed for a lot of countries, at least. You can no longer just do this legally. So it's kind of fucked up, right?
Yeah. I mean, we were just doing this shit, right? Like, we were just doing whatever on whoever. Like the mice experiment still fucked me up, and I think like rightly so as well.
And they still do that, yeah.
Yeah, yes. But I was reading one about which I'd love to like dig more into one day in why we sleep and why essentially we will die without sleep, and the case is not like as clear cut as you think it is, but the as part of this, they had to keep a whole bunch of mice, like, awake constantly. And these experimenters are just like, oh, just please die already. Just die already so that we can, like, stop doing this, please. Oh. This sucks. Like,
God damn.
Yeah.
There's a lot of just, especially older papers. If you have to, for my job, I've had to do, like, digging back into older, like, papers from the 10s and 20s and 50s about fish biology. And it's just... the things we do to fish to see what happens is really fucked. And sometimes it's not like they're doing it for fun. A lot of time it's like you need to know how much temperature change a fish can take before it dies because you need to know how to protect them from, you know, climate change, whatever. But some of these experiments, it's like we cauterized their gills to see if they could still survive with, you know, half their gills in oxygen.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, what the fuck, man?
And it turns out they couldn't, but it sucked the whole time that they did.
Yeah, they probably didn't enjoy that experience.
Also, eat octopus, which I think is sorry to any octopus enjoyers. I feel like that's a fucked up one.
Yeah, I can't do it.
I after reading this book, I will. I can't do it. I really can't. It's like tough.
Yeah, it's one of the things that I really struggle watching in movies is that that scene in Old Boy, the Korean one where he eats a live octopus. It's no good, the little squirmy one.
Yeah, that's no good.
No good. Shouldn't be allowed. Mm. That should be. I'd be if I was president. I would make that specifically the only crime.
No eating live octopus.
Like, stop doing that. Cut it out. Okay. So you're on a lighter note. On your next slide here, on the left, I think, is a very sweet octopus that lives in the deep sea. This is one of the few deep sea octopods.
Kind of coy. He's like kind of showing just a little bit of his ankles under his petticoat.
Yeah, listener, Google the
He's
Dumbo
doing
octopus.
A little
He's doing an oo-woo. To be sure, he's doing an oo-woo. This the is known as the Dumbo octopus. Dumbo, like the elephant.
Oh, he does look like Dumbo. Yeah,
you can probably guess why.
Oh, he's sweet. Oh, he's just a little. He's just a little guy.
And they live in the utter blackness of the deep sea.
Okay.
Far from the sun's grasp, which is pretty cool. If you're able to click on that video on the right, listener, just Google cuttlefish changing color. This will blow your goddamn mind. Basically, cuttlefish are—they're not octopodes, but they are—they're cephalopods.
They're close.
Okay.
I believe I always fuck that up though. Could be wrong. And they can change their skin color and texture to complex patterns and whatnot.
That's cool.
Yeah, they're really
some
wild.
Lisa Frank bullshit. He's sassy. He's jazzy.
They do do a lot of Lisa Frank shit, to be honest.
Love it. Big fan.
Okay, a few more. I got a few more anecdotes for you. Here's a fun one.
Did you just turn a piece of paper?
This is the book. I'm holding the physical book.
Oh, okay.
Book.
Yeah. All right. I thought you'd written out notes for yourself, which would have been adorable.
Kind of. Well, I just ripped a bunch of notebook papers to serve as makeshift bookmarks, and then I'm going to these little pages. We have two. I believe these are cuttlefish, right? These are cuttlefish named the author named Matisse and Kandinsky. Is that a reference?
Okay.
Well, they'd be
Who's
artists,
Kandinsky?
Right? Yeah.
I don't know
the second guy.
He's a Russian painter. Thanks, Google.
Here we go. Okay.
Art much?
We're not good on culture on this podcast.
I think these might be painters. So he's talking about... He's got two... This is a guy who's been scuba diving, and he sees two cuttlefish one after another. Quote, I suppose it is possible that Matisse was alarmed, but why did everything else about him look so calm? Occasionally he produced yellow patterns in response to intrusive fish, but these were deeper yellows combined with an arrangement of arms. The uniform blazes of canary yellow I saw appeared to be part of a different behavior. He seemed to have a liking for these chromatic explosions. In the years since, I have seen quite a few other cuttlefish produce these yellow flares, though none who lit the water up quite like Matisse.
You really like this guy, huh? You've really been thinking about Matisse for a while.
Given what I said about the machinery of color change, it's easy to work out how this is done. A giant cuttlefish has some yellow chromatophores, so the flares were almost certainly produced by expanding suddenly those chromatophores and scaling back everything else. Well, after Matisse had come and gone, a cuttlefish arrived who displayed were beyond anything I had ever encountered. The only suitable name for him was Kandinsky. Again, don't get it, but... Kandinsky had fixed habits and a definite home. Unlike Matisse, he did not have a single notable color. He produced the same kind of patterns and colors that the others did, but in a more extravagant way. For about a week in 2009, when I was trying to get a perfect photograph of him, I would visit him in his home. I would arrive late in the afternoon each day and wait at the surface above his den, which was about 12 feet down. He would eventually emerge and come up to man the top of the rock, facing the ocean side. He held two arms aloft with the others roaming about below him. I would swim down to meet him. When I arrived, he would have arms going everywhere, like a collection of ceremonial lances. Sometimes he would knot a couple arms together over his head. Raised arms are often a sign of agitation and sometimes hostility, but I didn't think this was true of Kandinsky, as he tended to produce such elaborate shapes continually, even when I was a fair distance away. On his skin, Kandinsky favored flaring mixtures of red and orange, including a pale orange-green, which he often combined with these colors with the, quote, passing cloud display, in which waves of dark shapes flow over the skin. After hovering in the water near his favorite rock for a while, he would set off to tour the shallows. He was not one of the friendly cuttlefish, but he would allow me to follow closely as he roamed in loops through the reefs around his den. That's Kandinsky for
That's
you.
Some beautiful Matisse. Writing about a cuttlefish. Like, this guy's really sweet, right? been inspired by this cuttlefish.
Let me tell you, this guy has thought about it for a long time. So that's kind of a Cliff's Notes of octopod intelligence, but if we have a little bit of time, I would like to tell you a little bit about fish intelligence since I am a fish guy.
6 minutes. Hammer it out.
6 minutes? Okay. If you go to the next slide, you'll see what's called the Ebbinghaus illusion. Are you familiar with this? Basically, listener, it's a bunch of circles and an orange circle in the middle, and the orange circle looks really small. Just Google Ebbinghaus illusion. Either of you tell me which of those circles is larger or smaller?
They're probably the same size, huh? But the one on the right looks smaller. Because our brains are dumb.
The one on the left looks smaller?
Left looks smaller, sorry.
They're the same. You're right. They're the same. But we can be fooled by these optical illusions, which...
Because we have stupid human brains.
Well, and some people argue that that's a sign of that you have some kind of awareness inside you, is like, can you be fooled by stuff like this? And fish,
yeah,
indeed,
I'm very aware.
Can be... We are at least as smart in this regard as or stupid as fish, because fish also fall for this.
Okay.
They also don't know which one is, if you like tie it to food or whatever, they can't figure it out when the illusion is set up this way. Next slide. If you look up deep sea dragonfish, you'll see fish that can shine bioluminescent light that only they can see in a certain wavelength so that they can find other fish, which is not necessarily intelligent behavior, but it's pretty sophisticated.
That's pretty cool. Why don't we have, like, all animals have something really cool that they can do, and we can't really do anything cool.
And we can't see in UV, exactly. A lot of these fish can in coral reefs. They can see totally different colors. They can see.
We've got those big can exhausts that you can put on your on your car, and they're pretty loud, and they let
those
you find other,
nope.
Yeah,
yep.
Other
fine chicks.
Yeah.
Okay, next slide, please. There is a man petting
Lucy.
A grouper.
There's a man petting a big disgusting grouper. That's me.
But here's the thing: people have long reported that groupers enjoy a good pat. So
yeah,
really?
Yes, they will come to you for a little pet.
I went snorkeling. On the reef once up near Cairns, and they're there. They're just fucking hanging out. People get mad there's no groupers in Cairns or whatever. I don't know. But they follow you around, sort of like hanging out. It's very odd.
Yeah. And they'll even co-hunt with on the right. If you Google grouper and moray eel hunting together, they cooperatively hunt with a different species entirely. So like
they're just vibing together.
The
eel, that's weird.
Exactly, they're like two bros.
Yeah.
That's a strange combo. That's a real odd couple scenario.
Yeah, and they communicate
here,
to each other with like body motions. Is what we think. And the eel can like flush the prey out of small crevices, and the grouper can do other stuff, I guess. So they're two bros. Last thing,
he saw the
there's
tank.
A sweet pufferfish in, I think it's the Japanese white spotted pufferfish that makes elaborate sand designs for its mate, potential mate. And they just
like a little
like to
mandala
do that.
There.
Yeah,
cute.
They like to do that. Also, I don't know why, but when I copied this image from Google Images, there's a little watermark of what it appears to be Crocodile Dundee.
Crocodile yeah, that appears Dundee. To be Crocodile Dundee.
I thought why you would just put that in there as
no.
a little gag for us.
I don't think I did that. I don't know why that's there.
It's just a little square picture of Crocodile Dundee.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I thought that was, like, pretty appropriate, given you guys are from the same place as that man. That's all I have for you. Thank you so much for listening. There's so much more to fish intelligence I could talk about, but that's all there can be.
We can talk about it. I love seeing two different animals interact. Like, that's a little treat.
It's cool,
you
know, right?
You see two different animals that, like, otherwise wouldn't be around each other, and they're doing stuff together.
Like a raccoon and a duckling or something somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go to animal sanctuary.
Or like one of those little suckerfish that will swim inside another fish's mouth, chew off their tongue, and attach themselves there, and that's just where they live now.
Is that there's a parasitic isopod that basically gnaws off the tongue and then replaces it? It's the worst
and
thing.
And then, like,
ever
I'm
seen.
The tongue now. Look at me.
Well, what are you going to say if you're the host? Are you going to be like, well, now you have like a shittier tongue.
Well,
sure,
you can't do you can't do shit because you haven't got like thumbs or anything.
Yeah, you can't even tell anybody about it.
You just what? Can't understand.
I guess that can happen to us, like a tick or a leech. Just got to kind of deal with it.
Well,
like,
I guess so, because we like up until the invention of modern pharmaceuticals, if you got worms, you just had worms.
Oh,
that's it. You got worms now.
That's great that, you can just have a worm in your body. It's like eating your stuff.
Yeah. And you can't get him out. Like, that's his
crib
now.
Off little bits at a time or whatever. I forget how tapeworms work. I think all living creatures feel some sort of, feels like something to be a lot of creatures, and I think we should all treat them with dignity and respect. However, The tapeworm is the most fucked thing. I hate them so fucking much.
Yeah.
They should be
shot. I think the tapeworm's the worst. There are several creatures that deserve disdain and possible cruelty.
That concept that, like, if you were to, like, click your fingers and make a species extinct, then, you know, that ecosystem would collapse. It's not true for all creatures, right? Like, mosquitoes, for example, have a negative effect on every ecosystem that they interact with, and we'd just be better off with them. I'm gonna put it out there, open myself up to cancellation. Mosquitoes, no good, and I hope they all explode.
I feel the same way about wasps.
Yeah,
what are wasps offering anybody?
Yeah, they're like bees that can...
That have no positive? They're doing nothing? Bang, yeah.
They make figs for you, the parasitic fig
they
wasp.
They do make figs. We have wasps to thank for figs, yeah. And they do pollinate. They do a lot of... They're actually really good pollination. But we could just be using bees.
Can we just replace them with bees? Like, more bees.
More bees, less wasps. Yeah.
I'd be down for that. I love a good bee. I think they're
We got those big, fluffy bumblebees in Tasmania. Yeah. Love them.
Moron bees, just bouncing.
Oh, my God.
They're adorable.
Put a little hat on them or something. That's what they should do.
They should put little hats on them. I agree.
Yep.
Well, thanks for the octopus talk.
Thank you guys.
I still think they're they're bad. I love them and I fear them.
Sure.
Yeah.
They are malevolent and possibly like satanic creatures. Like, they're like the goat. Them. They're from Satan.
Yeah.
I think they'd be nice to you.
Maybe.
Well, we don't hear about a lot of pet octopuses, right?
No.
I don't feel like they're like kind of... They're not making friends.
No.
Yeah, and again, if you have one, you have to lock up all your guns, probably.
Yeah. I feel like he'd turn on you. Like, you might think he's your friend, but he treats you with disdain. Like, they don't seem to respect us.
Yeah. Octopus's understanding of the LD50 of several household chemicals is it's much better than you'd expect.
It's like, honey, have you seen the bleach and ammonia bottles?
What was that? Charles has got them.
Oh, shit. Oh, wow. Thank you, guys. I enjoy talking about these horrible beasts that I love.
Love it. Can you come back soon and talk about another horrible beast?
Sure.
Man.
All right.
Me.
That's a podcast. Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.